Good afternoon, everybody. Today is March 31st, 2017. My name is Jerome Lovato, and this is the beginning of our Wrestling Audit participation group. I almost forgot what I was doing today. It's Friday, and it's dreary outside in Denver, Colorado. I think I'm ready for a nap. So we're going to get started. I'll get started with who's present in our office. This is the Aspen Conference Room at the Colorado Secretary of State's office. And then for those who have called in, if you can identify yourself. So from our office, we have Jesse Romero, Danny Casillas, Ben Rector, and Dwight Shellman, who will be here shortly. And in the audience, we have Neil McBurnett, Harvey Branscombe, Matt Crane, Jennifer Morrell, Merlin Klotz, Kyle, is it Ruli? Ruli, Jimmy Flanagan. Kyle and Merlin are from Douglas County. Matt and Jennifer are from Arapahoe County. Jimmy Flanagan from Denver County. Cody Swanson from Jefferson County. And who do we have on the phone?
This is Ron Rosette. Mark Lindemann.
Janice Voss, Caudill, and Greg McPherson from Pitkin.
Brandy Ward and Garland Wall from Washington.
Pam Bacon from Logan.
Boulder.
You sound as sleepy as I am, Crystal.
I am. I'm glad it's Friday.
Is that everybody on the phone? All right. So we'll get right into it. So last week I had submitted a couple of assignments. And thank you all for those who provided feedback. I still need to get at least one more document up on the website, so I'll do that early next week. And that was submitted from Douglas County. So I asked about methods for non-CVR counties, and Douglas County, of the four options that we talked about, seems to prefer the ballot polling method. I'd like to discuss this a little more later on in the meeting. And then in regards to contests to audit, if there's not a countywide contest, and the feedback I received from a couple of the counties was the suggestions were to select a contest with the largest number of eligible voters on election day within that county. And so that was one of the suggestions, and I thought it was a pretty good suggestion. And then the last one was, if we just audit a statewide contest, and then I kind of ran through this scenario of what happens if county doesn't get selected to audit. So we had a meeting with Secretary of State Wayne Williams earlier this week, and it was decided that every county will conduct an audit. So if there's a countywide contest, we'll do that, and if not, there'll be some other criteria. More than likely, the contest that has the most registered voters. And so we, and if we do have a statewide, we'll also do a statewide contest as well. So that was nice to get an answer to that question. And so so that was kind of pretty simple to get through. And so now I want to just go over the review the steps one more time for conducting a comparison risk limiting audit, and then and also go over the timelines, that preliminary timeline that we put together. So if you're for those who can follow along, or who can only listen, if you go to our office's RLA website, on the very top link, comparison risk limiting audit step by step, is what we're going to look at right now. And I just want to review this timeline, get feedback from anyone who has feedback regarding this timeline. So I put in here on October 23rd, that's the date where counties have to appoint a canvas board. And so we'll also include appointing the audit board at that time. November 7th, obviously election day. November 11th, Veterans Day. And then this year, we just have a really tight timeline with conducting the RLA and then the time to canvas. So the 16th, November 16th, we have for counties to submit their ballot manifest and CVRs. So that's the end of the ninth day after the election. And then the 17th is when our office will send the what to audit information to the counties. And then on the 18th is when the audit will begin. And that's, by the way, a Saturday. Is that right? I think it is. On the 20th, we have for counties to submit their initial audit results. The 21st for our office to provide the feedback, and then on the 22nd, which is the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, to wrap up the audit Thanksgiving on that Thursday, and then November 24th is the canvas deadline. Our office is closed on November 24th. For those that may be wondering why we have the 22nd to finalize the audit. And I know at least a handful of counties that are also closed on the 24th. So are there any questions or comments regarding the timeline? Matt?
Yeah, it's like for a half second, then it should turn green. Just double B.
Matt Crane, Arapahoe County. Just curious, in terms of that you just mentioned there at the end, the 22nd for the report to come back, and then the 24th for the canvas deadline. If we can still send it over electronically on the 24th, it might be nice for some counties to have that extra time to get the audit report back over. I don't see an issue as long as you're accepting the canvas electronically. Why the RLA results would be any different than that?
Well. One part is if we have to do any kind of additional selection and the looping associated with that. Now for whether or not we'll be here on the 24th, that's for my management to decide. but that's what we have for our preliminary timeline right now.
I think if that's the
consideration,
if that's the consideration, then you may want to move it back, because I suspect most counties, some counties may wait to the end of the day to get it over to you, and then if you had to go back and have them do any additional work, you wouldn't do that if it came in right at 5 o'clock anyway, if they went home. So if that's a consideration, then you might want to move it a day earlier as opposed to the 22nd.
So you're suggesting to move that back to the 21st?
Well, along I kind of like the idea of sending it all in together on the canvas deadline. But if you want the more time, I would do it the 21st and not the 22nd. Because with the holiday the next day, if everybody waits to the last minute which when I were, that was a long time ago, ancient history, but when I did, that's how counties did it. Most of them came in at the last minute. There wouldn't be any time to go back to them at that point and to say, hey, we need some more information before the holiday.
Yeah, and we started conducting the regional trainings last week, I hope everyone, especially in the counties, understand that this is a really tight timeline, and it'll be very important for us to get the information as soon as possible, so that we're not waiting to the last minute to do these things. Because as it is with working in elections, and I'm sure at the county level, but for sure at the state level, we do have a lot of people who, not a lot, at least a handful of people in counties who send stuff at the last minute for everything. So we really can't afford the last minute type submission for RLA. And so that's something we are stressing in the regional trainings. Yeah, I mean, kind of it is what it is, and we'll work till, you know, and we're not going to work on Thanksgiving, but we'll do whatever we have to do to make this work. And Ron, did you have a question or a comment?
Yeah, I had a question. Thanks. A question in regards to the escalation before recount and audit. If you do a real risk-limiting audit, has the possibility of escalating to a full recount. And I'm wondering what the time frame would that be if that does happen.
I'm sorry, Ron.
Think he asked about a full recount. Is that right?
Yeah, sorry if I'm getting in the hotel lobby here. So a little bit of background there. I apologize. The question was, if the audit escalates to a full recount, what's the time frame for that?
And did we resolve this?
Hold on a second, Neil. Dwight, can you chime in on this?
Sure. The basically, I think the way we're thinking about it, Ron, by the way, this is Dwight from the Secretary of State's office, is that this timeline is so tight. If the audit escalates to a full recount, please correct me if you think I'm wrong, but I think the chances of that happening are going to be isolated to individual counties as opposed to the entire state.
Yes, that would be correct if all we're auditing is county-level contents, yes.
So as I'm looking at this timeline, the counties are submitting their initial audit results to us by November 20th. As I see it, Jerome, if we identify any additional ballots because of anomalies discovered during the audits, we would be notifying the counties of that by November 21st, right? And that yes. would give them until November 22nd to submit the final audit report. Mm-hmm. So by the same token, if we identify, you know, a large number of anomalies on November 21st such that a county is required to do a full recount, we need to notify that county on November 21st that will be required. And you know, I don't think any of us have any illusions that can possibly be accomplished by the canvas deadline, but it's a logical consequence of the risk-limiting audit protocol. And, you know, one additional policy question we need to bring to the secretary is, in this rule, do we need to reserve to the secretary the authority to postpone a canvas deadline if that's required? That there's no such statutory authority for that, but it is kind of a logical implication of a risk-limiting audit, and the secretary has pretty extensive rulemaking authority under the risk-limiting audit statute. So I realize, Ron, I'm kind of dancing around your question here because the timeline is so short that if we end up with a county that has to escalate to a full manual recount, that county is in serious trouble, just in terms of satisfying the statutory deadline.
Right. So
this is Neil.
Your comments and analysis sound right to me.
I'm sorry, Ron, what did you say?
I just said the comments and analysis there sound right to me. I think the Secretary of State may need to take some additional rulemaking authority to extend the campus or something. Or authorize switching over to just a risk measuring audit if necessary.
Yeah, so I'm just going to kind of paraphrase what you just said because we are having problems hearing you here, that you thought that that analysis that I just provided sounded generally correct and that some consideration should be given to authority to extend a canvas deadline if necessary to complete the risk-limiting audit.
Yeah, this is Neil McCord. And I was just going to point out, I think it's the case that there's already time after this whole deadline during which recounts sometimes happen. You know, most recounts happen after this. So it's like there's already time set aside after all the dates that are currently on the screen, and so we could use that time. And you're just saying that we would need statutory, we would need to clarify the rule to make it possible.
Yeah, I mean, so this is Dwight Shulman again. That's an interesting point. Ordinarily, you don't even know if you're in a mandatory recount position until the canvas, because that will determine whether you're within that 0.5% margin. So the question is, you know, if we, during the course of the risk-limiting audit, identify a county that, for auditing purposes, needs to proceed to a full recount, can we then defer that full recount into what would normally be a recount period? I don't see a problem with that. My only thought is the current statute and rules envisions two kinds of recounts. One's a mandatory that the county essentially pays for, and one's a permissive recount where whoever's requesting it has to post money. And so now we have potentially a third type of recount, which is a risk-limiting audit recount, if you will, that we just don't have any kind of authoritative legislation on at this point. And it seems to me it would be an appropriate subject for rulemaking.
This is Matt Crane. Dwight, I think I would have, at least as I think about it right now in the short term, a philosophical problem. You know, if we canvassing knowing that we had to do a recount as a result of an issue during an RLA. So I just think we have to be very careful in how we do that, because I wouldn't feel comfortable canvassing anything and then going to the recount period to conduct a recount. Because if you know there's a problem somewhere, some way like that, you shouldn't be canvassing, right?
I do not disagree, Matt, and it's just the timeline is so short. We just need to figure out a workable solution, and I do not pretend to know what that is right now. I think there are a lot of different ways that we can get there.
Thank you all for your feedback. Is there any additional feedback regarding the preliminary timeline? Well, as usual, if there is, please submit your feedback to me by way of email.
This is Neil, and I just also wanted to say that my hope is that in lots of places, and I think in a lot of ways we defined it in a lot of places to be efficient, so that this might all kind of begin and end on the 18th. There might be a lot of counties, especially. I mean, I know I have a sense that you don't want to count on software, and I wouldn't count on software more than I need to. And so if we define it conservatively, but then end up with time-tested and very effective aids of various kinds, and I think we're going to learn a lot more by doing more pilots and by getting some software aids and so on, that this might all go much more easily. So I don't want the message to be oh my gosh, this is going to be, it's going to take days and days and days. Most cases, hopefully that's not the case.
Oh, we'll see. We won't know till we know. And hopefully it does go smooth. The next thing is, I just want to just briefly, last week I did a step-by-step for the comparison wrestling audit, and I'm just going to go through this briefly because I didn't really change anything, but I added some time frames from the timeline we discussed, and then on number 7, before it just said the audit board retrieves the selected ballots and then compares them to the CVR, and then I added records their interpretation of the ballot. So the idea is that when the audit board retrieves a ballot, that they record the content of that ballot by some method, and then from that point, then it's compared to the CVR. And so with all of these steps, please feel free to submit your comments or red lines to it. And as we get into the drafting the rules and all of that, we'll have more detail to this this item. But I just want to bring that to everyone's attention. That's still open for comment and suggestions. And so the next thing on the agenda is to discuss the methods and timelines for conducting an RLA with the legacy voting systems. As it stands now, we haven't nailed down a method or methods or timelines for how it'll be conducted for the counties that don't have the Dominion voting system. So I would like to just open that this discussion up right now to try to put a little more meat around this, because we still have to define the rules for these counties. Does anybody have any thoughts on timelines or if outside of the four methods that we talked about the last meeting, any other ideas about how to conduct an RLA for the legacy systems? I mean, I just I don't. It's still I think based off of Douglas County's comments, which I will add to the website about the batch method, that does seem very cumbersome for particularly for them and in other Hart counties. But I'm just kind of at a loss as to where to kind of how to start defining procedures for the non-Dominion counties and even timelines, because they're not going to be on the same schedule as the comparison group as far as turning around everything. I mean, because they could, especially when it comes to a statewide contest. Since for a statewide contest with the comparison RLA, we'll need all of the counties that are participating in that at the same time before we conduct the audit. But I don't know if that's going to be the case for the non-Dominion counties. So Neil, do you have some feedback here?
Well, I was thinking, I think a lot of people were looking at polling ballots for that form of audit. And really the process is very similar. They don't have CVRs to upload, but in order to do the poll randomly, they're going to use the same random number, pseudo-random number sequence that is generated, you know, after all of the other reports are in. So they, you know, the normal flow, I think, would be to wait for all the CVRs to be in and then for them to be able to start polling. And, you know, this procedure prepares them for the time when they do have the CVRs to work from. They get a sense for what it's like to retrieve the right number. They don't get to do the comparison and confirm that they found the right one, but I think it handles a lot of the aspects of it. So the timing seems pretty similar to me.
Can I ask a question just along those lines? When you talk about pulling the right ballot, have we had any more discussion about imprinting or recommendations on doing that for counties?
I do know that Jefferson County is going to attempt to imprint when they get their voting equipment, and so we're just waiting for that all to happen and to see if it's something that's will be feasible. And so that'll be in the summer sometime. Kyle?
This is Kyle Rooley from Douglas County. And Neil, I just kind of wanted to agree with you. It's if I'm understanding everything correctly, it seems pretty similar to the counties that do have CVRs. We're just not uploading the CVRs. So I don't think timelines are that much of an issue.
Go ahead,
Dwight.
I just had a question. This is Dwight. despite my best efforts, I still do not have a good sense of the comparative number of ballots that would need to be examined in a comparison audit where you have cast vote record, ballot level cast vote records, and in a ballot polling audit where you do not. My sense is that in the ballot polling context, there are significantly more ballots that a county would have to examine. But I'm wondering if one of our math gurus can maybe help me and give me some.
Sure, this is Ron. My best guess, it's a great question. And there is some difference between the both the mean and the variance for how many ballots you need to look at for a ballot poll audit. So if you have a margin of 10%, say, on a contest, then one over the margin is 10, and you would expect a ballot poll audit to have something about 10 times the amount of ballots. Sorry for the background. So you'd also expect a higher level of variance.
I'm sorry, Ron. This is Jerome. I don't know if it's on your end or like our.
It's on my end. I'm going to hold that guy.
Yeah, because it's just really hard to hear. It's.
Let me try again. It comes and goes. So or maybe Neil can fill it in. The ballot polling audit will be larger by a factor on the average. That's about one over the margin. So if you have a margin of say 5%, one over the margin is 20, and so you have a factor of about 20 times more ballots to look at with the ballot polling audit. Plus, there's more variability. So that's the relative, that's an average number. The comparison audits have much smaller variance, if any, and the ballot polling audit tend to have more. So that's my rule of thumb. I think that's an approximation, but it should be a good one to get going. For a contest that's a landslide, if the margin is 30%, then one over the margin is roughly 3, and the ballot polling audit might have to be 3 times as much. So that's the penalty you pay for doing a ballot polling audit. Does that help?
It does. So I'm just going to repeat that just because the audio here is a little spotty. So you basically said, and I'm going to delete all of your explanation because I'm not sure I can accurately repeat it, but basically if you have a contest with a 10% margin, a ballot polling county likely would need to examine approximately 10 times the number of ballots as a comparison audit county. A 5% margin would mean that a ballot polling county would need to examine about 20 times the number of ballots. And then a landslide margin of about 30%, a ballot polling county would likely need to examine approximately 3 times as many ballots as a comparison audit county.
That's my rule of thumb.
Okay. So, you know, we've been running some numbers on our end, just getting some getting some representative samples from some actual statewide and county contests in the past to give him a sense of how many ballots, you know, is a comparison audit county. And in statewide races, we had several counties in the 250 ballot range. 20 times that number is a big time amount of ballots. And then on countywide contests, the number of ballots are comparatively smaller. But still, we can be, you know, having to examine 2,500 to 5,000 ballots. Wow. I mean, I know counties now that in the random audit, it takes them 2 to 3 days to examine 500 ballots. And that's a big crunch.
Yeah, so this is Neil, and this is one of the reasons why I was counseling a couple weeks ago that a ballot polling audit has very low kind of barriers to entry. Anybody can do it if you just kind of know how many ballots you have in your boxes. But it's far, far less efficient. And another thing that Ron mentioned that might not have come through is the predictability, as it were. So I'm not going to have the right numbers at the top of my head, but depending on whether you can call it lucky or unlucky in which which ballots you choose, you know, so if Smith is the declared winner, and if you happen in your polling to come up with lots of ballots that have Smith, you know, maybe more lucky than the actual proportion, you'll meet the risk limit sooner. But if you're unlucky and happen to find a lot of you know, ballots for the runner-up, the expected number of ballots, the number of ballots before you meet the risk limit, can increase quite a bit. It's very different than the comparison-based audits, where if you don't have any discrepancies, you know you're going to hit the limit at kind of the pre-calculated numbers. If you have discrepancies, of course, there's something to look at, or you have to make up for that. In a ballot polling audit, you might end up counting several times as many as those big numbers if you kind of have an unlucky start to it. So that's kind of why I was recommending that I view the ballot polling audit more as a means to learn how to do the procedures that you will do when you have CVRs. But it's going to be absolutely be a challenge to meet a meaningful risk limit. And so with contests that have a wide margin, it won't be a problem. If it's a close margin, you might need to consider what to do under those circumstances. And obviously, doing a full recount, you don't have to independently, randomly select the ballot, so you save a lot. But it's then similar to recounts that you're used to, and certainly those are challenging. So personally, I can envision a number of ways to cope with that, but This all emphasizes the benefits of the systems that Colorado is now acquiring that allow us to do ballot comparison audits.
So for the, I have a question just for the ballot polling, just from the practical point of view, is when you do a ballot polling audit, do we still randomly select ballots? And then you just say whatever the contest is, say it's president, and yes for or candidate A, B, C, whatever, and then you mark that and then move on to the next, and say it's candidate A is the winner, you pick candidate A, and then you pick a candidate B, and then it says, okay, now I need to look at more, or I guess if you see more of the losing candidate, you just continued until you have that level of confidence, correct?
Yeah, I mean, it's really very, very similar to an exit poll. And we're all used to the fact that they do poll thousands of people, 1,000 or 2,000. I don't know their exact numbers, but they poll a lot of people, and they have a big margin of error. And obviously, their margin of error is kind of related to the margin in the contest. They're going to not be very confident about a contest where the margin of their error is close to the closeness of the contest itself. So, but you are right that if you're unlucky, as it were, or if you're actually coming up with lots of votes that are evidently for the loser, I mean, that is evidence that there's something going on, and you might need to look further.
So without a cast vote record or any indication as to how the voting system interpreted that one ballot that's selected, kind of what's the point of a random selection? Because if you say, "Oh, randomly selecting these ballots, and we're going to, and this is where we're going to go," I mean, there's no indication that those ballots are what they are anyway. You understand what I'm saying?
It's even more important to have a really good, I mean, it's always completely important to have a random sample, because it's just, if you were to take just ballots from a particular precinct, well, we don't do it by precinct, but a particular town, you're going to get a very biased sample, and you know, we all know that there are precincts that report different results. So, go ahead.
If you have a county that gets 90% mail ballot returns, how is that not random?
Am I misunderstanding the question?
My point is that in a comparison Risling audit, you select a ballot and you compare it to a cast vote record, and you can tell if there's a discrepancy. In a ballot polling audit, if you select a ballot, whether it's random or not, you don't know how that voting system interpreted that ballot. You're just checking if it's for the winner or not, correct?
This is Ron. I can try to answer that. So, yeah, it's a great question. And if you have vote by mail, you know, you might plausibly assume that the ballots, as they come in by mail, come in random order. I don't know if that's a good assumption or not. If it were, then you might be able to just look at the ballots in order somehow. That's sort of an experiment that I'd be doing. But absent that, as Neil says, looking at them in random order is possible, because you're trying to estimate the fraction of votes for the winner, basically, and the fraction of votes for the runner-up. And you can do that in a statistically sound manner if you have a random sample. If you don't have a random sample, then all bets are off, and you may be looking at things in some order that biases your conclusions.
This is Mark. Just to be clear, so a ballot polling audit can be used to verify the winner, more or less, to provide strong evidence that the reported winner actually won, which is the bottom line in a risk-limiting audit. But, Jerome, I think what you're rightly pushing on you can't tell whether those individual ballots were counted correctly or not. So it gives very indirect evidence about what the equipment was doing.
Yes, that's exactly what I'm getting to, Mark. And so that's why my question for the method of doing the ballot polling audit is still how essential is this random selection, especially in a state that gets mostly mail ballots, and when Ron mentioned earlier about this being an assumption that the ballots received are random, we got head nods and head shakes on this end from the counties. If they want to chime in on that particular topic, and it looks like Merlin does. But it's just a question that I have regarding, since we will have to draft rules and procedures for this of you know, what truly makes sense. And it would be nice. I know there is documentation about ballot polling audits, but I think a lot of it's based off the assumption of this happening on a precinct level and not in a state where most of our ballots come in by way of mail. So Merlin?
Once again, I'll rarely agree with Mr. Stark, but I think not the ballots need to be random sampled, but the batches need to be pulled randomly for a polling place audit like we're talking. But I think there's also, that brings back the value in the reprocessing of the ballots through the equipment like we currently have been doing. And I think that's where you gain a lot of confidence. I don't think our sample size has been big enough in the past for that, but I do believe that there's a lot of validity in that process, not quite in line with the RLA theory, but I think there's a lot of value there.
Thank you, Merlin.
Jerome, this is Mark. I would just say that whatever is done with ballot polling, which I'm somewhat agnostic about, frankly, whatever is done, I personally strongly believe that the sampling should be done randomly. That sets you up for ballot comparison auditing, and it doesn't require anyone to rely on any sort of untestable properties about the order in which mail-in ballots come. So that would be my strong recommendation. And I think it would be important to find a way to make it work. right? We shouldn't. The rule shouldn't propose anything that will make election officials melt down, because there's no value added in that. But the principle of random sampling, as Ron said, is as important for ballot polling as it is for ballot comparison. And this really is supposed to set counties up for ballot comparison in the future. So really, on both those grounds, I would strongly recommend random sampling.
Thank you, Mark.
This is Neil, and I'd actually say I could argue that it would be more important. I mean, it's completely important for both of them. But the risk is that a truly random sample will save the counties from a situation where there's in some batches that they choose to do just straight out of the mailbox or whatever, in some batches they either came in early and public opinion changed over time, or they were coming in from a town that had a different set of policies. It might get you into that situation I was just talking about a minute ago, where there's fewer votes for the winner and more votes for the actual loser, and now the amount that you have to poll in order to get the confidence you want is higher. So a truly random sample saves you from the risk of a high variance, saves you from the risk of needing to do yet more counting in order to get reliable numbers. So I think randomness is not the place to skimp.
So this is Dwight. Let me just share with you my concerns about this. So I'm just thinking about this and thinking that a legacy system county may have to audit 2,500 ballots. The practical concern here is there is no possible way that can happen according to this timeline if They are spending the majority of their time, you know, where we randomly select a batch and a ballot within the batch. They have to go get that bin, unseal it, maintain chain of custody, find the single ballot in that huge bin, put it back, reseal it. I mean, that's not going to be feasible. So a couple things I wanted to say. It's not only that we have mail ballots in this state, it's that all mail ballots within a county are centrally counted. And they are batched kind of in the order received. A smaller batch number is going to correspond to an earlier reception date for that ballot. And I do think that we can get some efficiencies for the legacy system counties by adopting Merlin's recommendation of randomly selecting the batches. So you get a random representation of all ballots, regardless of when they are received in the election cycle, but then allow the county to do the ballot polling on every single ballot within those randomly selected batches. And I know that may not be ideal from a randomness perspective, but we're basically asking counties that do not have voting systems that export a ballot level CVR to participate in a statewide risk limiting audit. And we just have to, you know, I've said before, we really need to be careful about making sure the counties can succeed at this. And I'm not saying that to wash over any problems that may exist in an election. But
right.
This experiment will be a huge failure if, you know, Merlin Klotz is calling my boss at midnight on Thanksgiving whining about how many hours he had to spend retrieving ballots. And just to give everybody in the room an order of magnitude here, at this juncture, we're looking at 9 to 12 legacy system counties this year. So we're, you know, 53 to 55 CVR counties, which is going to be a good percentage of the state. But the timing in the voting systems world is just not everybody has had the opportunity to move to the new system.
Right.
Systems. Thanks.
This is Ron. I appreciate what you just said. Can I ask a question? The auditing we're doing here, there's two. We're talking about auditing on the one hand, county level contests. And for that, the whole county is either going to be some sort of ballot polling audit, or maybe some sort of comparison audit. On the other hand, what I'm hearing in this discussion is some discussion of statewide contests, where you've got some counties being CVR counties and some counties being non-CVR counties. And for that situation, the math and the procedures and so on are quite a bit different than a situation where you've got a uniform audit across the county. Here you have a non-uniform procedure, and there may be ways of adapting it so that the non-legacy, or the legacy counties actually are arranged to do less work somehow. But I had the impression that we weren't expecting statewide contests.
Well, we don't know if we're going to have a statewide contest this year. What I'm being told by the people who understand our legislature, which I am not among, is there's a 50-50 chance that we're going to have a statewide measure. And so we just don't know. That may happen or not. I actually toyed with the idea of asking the secretary to place a mock question statewide on the ballot, but unfortunately that means we would have to pay out about $1 million. So that's not really doable either. So we just don't know yet, Ron. And this is, you know, this year presents a lot of anomalies. This is our election day this year is absolutely the last day that we can have an election in an odd year. So that's pushing us up against this Thanksgiving problem. And in addition, this is the first year in as long as I can remember that we haven't had a definite statewide ballot issue. So we're kind of struggling with those anomalies as well.
This is Kyle from Douglas County. I was just going to echo what you were saying before, Dwight. I guess I didn't understand that we may have to look at 2,500 ballots, and if that were the case, those deadlines would be blown out of the water. I mean, you would be looking at the end of December. That's crazy for us to have to pull an individual ballot from all these different batches. And so if we could look at it at the batch level, by looking at an entire batch for the results, that would definitely help out.
Okay, Jennifer. Thank you, Kyle.
I'm just going to add to what Dwight said as well. This is Jennifer Morrell. Just to clear up for Neil and Ron, both on the randomization idea, it's not just the mail ballots, because the ballots that come in, even though it's a small percentage of our voters that vote in person, those ballots that are printed out, those are completely random when they're scanned into batches as well. So you not only have voters from multiple precincts voting at one vote center, but at least the process in our warehouse will take multiple vote centers' ballots and combine those together. And so it's completely random. So I think the random batch idea would work.
Let me just say, when I was saying a minute ago, this is Neil again, that...
Hold on a second, Neil. Someone just chimed in.
This was Ron. I'm happy to hear what Neil has to say.
Okay.
So I was just going to say that my approach would be to kind of bail on the risk limit in a case like this, or basically just make it explicit that what we're doing is... helping these counties understand what it will be like when they do have cast vote record equipment. So I would say, well, wow, we're not really going to get the evidence that you would formally need, but I would much rather have everybody participating in a way that helps us get where we eventually want to go than to do a procedure that is at a batch level that has you doing something completely different that I will still just... The word random, maybe Ron will jump in here because he teaches this stuff, but the word random has a lot of different meanings. And I appreciate the sense that, wow, you just never know what to expect. But you just don't want to end up in a situation where there were a bunch of ballots, batches from a place that actually got a different result if you just counted one town. You know, if the town of Boulder was voting differently than the town of Louisville, and you happened to end up with, start off with some ballots from Boulder, and the other person was winning in those ballots, now you have to escalate the audit. And we're already talking about a procedure that's susceptible to the problems of escalation. So statistical randomness is a really precious thing, and it's really valuable when you get it. But I'll listen to Ron. He's the expert.
Harvey's had his hand up for a while, so Harvey, and then Berlin, okay. Matt, and whoever's
on. This is Harvey. So I am seconding the idea that there's something very precious about random, and it is not the case that the ballots coming in our mail ballot election are random. It's not the case that however it's being handled in the VSPCs or how they're being mixed, that that's causing randomness to occur. There is a lack of randomness there. And we need to use the PRNG across the entire scope of all the ballots in order to achieve the randomness that we need to achieve the outcome, the results that we want from the audit. However, that we don't have to be surprised with every new ballot that actually gets selected. We can actually select ballots in a planned order, and they can be selected accessed in groups. They don't have to be accessed one at a time and then decide what to do with the audit after we've seen that one ballot. And that means if we were looking at a sequence of hundreds of ballots, we could actually have the hundreds of ballots actually be interpreted or captured and then determine what happens next. And if there are hundreds of ballots, then they are going to group into common boxes. And it's possible to take them out of the box all at the same time. It is possible if you don't skip ahead and just stop because after you've picked a few out in the front, you have to get them all in the order because that's what the randomness requires, that you take all in the randomly distributed across all the ballots in a group that you're going to audit. But if you do take them all, then you can you can pull them in order within that. You just have to be very careful about that. But if you're looking at pulling 1,000 ballots and they're in 20 different boxes, you can actually do them one box at a time rather than having to do them in the exact order of the 1,000. So there are benefits to be obtained there. And that sort of stuff can be built into the election process, the audit process, so that we don't waste time. So it's very important to be careful about how the randomness is achieved.
Well, and before we get to Matt, I one thing I still am struggling with mentally and just trying to put myself in if I'm conducting the audit is that I understand randomness and the importance of randomness, and it still comes down to what happens if the ballot that was randomly chosen isn't the one I'm looking at. There's no way of verifying that. And that, to me, seems like at that point, what's the point of randomly selecting these ballots? If I'm looking at a batch of 200 ballots and the random selection says look at ballot 194 and I pick ballot 193. And because there's no cast vote record associated with this, I just am having a hard time mentally figuring out the importance of that link of that.
May I answer that? This is Ron.
Go ahead, Ron.
Good question. So my way of thinking about this is that you treat that just as if it were a scanner error. That is to say, the audit is set up to accommodate errors of various sorts. And it could be errors due to scanner errors, but it could be errors due to pulling the wrong ballot. It all comes out in the wash the same. The mathematics is the same. And pulling the wrong ballot just looks like the scanner misread the ballot or something. It's coming in a funny way. So I would say that can happen. And if it happens a lot, you might have some, it may take you longer than the audit, but normally this will just come out in the wash just as if there were scanner errors.
But Ron, the issue I have is that in the ballot polling, there's just no way of telling that was an error, unless there's someone else who comes back and does the recounts and says, oh no, you picked ballot 193 instead of ballot 194. I mean, there's just way of telling that's an error.
My only concern with that would be if somebody intentionally picked 193 instead of 194 because of what was said on the ballot. That would cause problems. But if he's just picking the next door ballot.
I don't think it's going to cause any problems with the map. But so I think from what it sounds like, we're talking about two different things. Because with the ballot polling option, there is no cast vote record associated with that ballot, and so there is no way of telling if what that ballot should be according to the voting system.
That's right. That's right. So it's just just needs to be a randomly selected ballot. And so unless there's bias introduced because of the error that you're talking about, it won't affect the mathematics. If the ballot is chosen to be the following ballot intentionally because it chooses the winner rather than the runner-up or something like that, that will introduce bias. So as long as you have reason to believe that the procedures that are being followed are such that the ballots being chosen are either the correct ones or maybe they're off by one but not in a way that's correlated with what's on the ballots. This should be okay.
Okay. Thank you, Ron. Matt?
So question, and I can't believe I'm asking this question. You guys know I'm a huge proponent of RLA. But I'm wondering, when it comes to the ballot polling, and we're talking about how many counties that won't be on the system?
Maximum of 12.
So we're talking about 52 counties that'll be on the system next year or this year that can do a comparison audit where we can get to the cast vote record. If we're talking about a ballot polling audit, help me understand, neither a ballot polling audit nor our existing post-election audit verify how the machine performed during the conduct of an election, right? In the case of our current audit, it just says, well, how does it compare to the hand count we just did? The ballot polling audit is, how does it compare to the hand count we just did? Is it better? Does it make more sense And I wouldn't say this have it go on infinitely, but does it make sense to say that the existing audit or some level of the existing audit is sufficient for these counties, at least until 2020, when presumably everybody's on a new system, the new system, whatever that may be. But are we racking our brains here unnecessarily when it's really not? Both of them are comparing not to how the machines performed your election, but to a separate hand count you're doing anyway. So are we racking our brains? Should we be more focused on how do we nail down a great comparison audit for 52 counties that eventually the additional 12 can come on board for, as opposed to going on, you know, an hour here, we've talked about it before, where we still can't even get off the question of whether or not we should be randomizing the ballots, right? It doesn't seem to me like the juice is worth the squeeze on that, when we can have 52 other, let's focus on where 52 are, and get it done really well in the comparison piece. And then we can have, I understand procedurally, Harvey and I were just talking about this, there's value in having the other 12 counties go through the procedures of pulling the ballots and getting used to that. But that's not a difficult thing, right? I mean, it's not like we're, you know, sending somebody to the moon by pulling ballots. So let's focus on where 52 people are and then bring the other 12 on over the course of the next 2 to 4 years.
Well, that's a good question, Matt, and we'll have to we have another meeting scheduled with the secretary, or we'll have one scheduled with the secretary to discuss some of these policy related issues. That's not something we can answer right now, but we will bring up. Well, Merlin?
Okay, Matt, I think you're dead on. I think you're dead on, really. But I think with respect to us on the legacy systems, I'll repeat what I said before. I don't think that our statistical samples have been large enough in the past. I think they're about half as big as they need to be. And to me, I'd like to see a 95% confidence that I'm within plus or minus 3%. And that requires about twice as many ballots that we look at. Now, the biggest variance that we have in the post-election audit is how a ballot was resolved. Did they resolve it correctly? And that's the kind of piece that you're really kind of run into in the RLA. How was a ballot resolved when they had other indicators as far as which they wanted to vote for? And so I think the most sense is that for the legacy systems, that we stay with the current post-election audit, but I do think we need to virtually double our or resize based on the county size, the election size, what is the right sample to be pulling for ballots. Now, back to the earlier question. By the time in our situation, the ballots come through the ballot the drop boxes and the sorter and get through to the scan room, they are highly randomized. But that isn't enough. Beyond that, we need to use a random sample to select the ballots, or the batches, I should say. And so that just further makes sure that we've got a randomness in what we're selecting. And we do need to have randomness even in the standard post-election audit that we're currently doing. So,
thank you, Merlin.
So this is Dwight. Let me. I do think we've kind of clobbered this poor horse to death. There's a lot of good ideas on the table. I just wanted to mention a couple more. Number one, if we want the legacy systems to do a ballot polling risk-limiting audit, one option is to permit them to start auditing much sooner, meaning they can give us their ballot manifests as it exists a day or two after the election. We can get them started, and then we can pull a final random sample for them to finish up. It's just not physically possible to do 2,500 ballots on on this timeline. So that's an option. The other option has been suggested is to for the secretary to basically adopt a rule exempting the legacy systems from the risk-limiting audit this year, requiring them to do the current random audit, maybe the current random audit with a bigger sample size, according to Merlin. So this is my question. If we waive the risk-limiting audit for the legacy counties this year on a statewide contest, what does it do to the validity of the audit if we say, okay, we have, let's say it's 52 counties that have CVR capability, and we allocate, randomly select and allocate ballots to audit among those 52 counties, excluding the 12 legacy system counties, and requiring the legacy system counties to do some other form of audit that may or may not get anywhere near a risk limit. Does that invalidate the entire statewide risk limiting audit?
This is Ron. I'd like to ask a question to follow up on your question. What's the relative population in those counties that have legacy equipment? I mean, a fraction of the state voters have will be voting on legacy equipment?
I can get you that. I do not have it on hand, but I'm guessing it's, give me just a second. Let me think. Maybe 85%?
I was guessing 15% the other way.
Yeah, so we're guessing approximately 85% of the active voters, which is the statistic we ordinarily use, would have the ability to participate in a comparison audit. But I can give you firm numbers on that.
Yeah, it's an interesting, this is Ron again. That's an interesting question to try to figure out what the impact would be. I think something like that makes sense. I very much like what Neil said and what you're saying here too, is that this is a special year that we should be trying to do the best we can on comparison audits where we can do them and where we can't do them. You know, we make a strong effort and learn what we can and do the math the best we can to combine them and see what results we get. But this year and some year is a practice year almost, a pilot year. You know, doing the best we can statewide to see what we can learn. And things are going to be changing soon. And let's just aim for that as a real goal.
And this is Neil. This is Neil, and I just wanted to say that Ron and I have, and some other folks have been looking at other kind of new research development methods to deal with this situation. And there are some very cool options Ron alluded to earlier, where if you do just a little bit more work in the CVR counties, you can take much less evidence, as it were, from the non-CVR counties and kind of say, well, we're really confident, so if you're not quite as confident when we put it all together, we end up meeting a risk limit. So, but I would characterize that as kind of being really the pilot of that kind of approach. And I really agree with Matt and with Merlin and others that this is not the thing to sweat. The thing to sweat is just getting our ducks in a row for the comparison audits, because that's where we're headed, that's what we want experience with, that's where we want the staffing to go to make that a success. And to use the other stuff as a fabulous learning experience. And I think we'll learn a lot kind of no matter how it comes out.
Well, it's kind of easy when you don't work here to say it's nothing to sweat.
I don't mean to diminish that. I'm really just trying to say that our focus, you know, it's less important to get all those details right.
Not for us. And so I just disagree, because we do have to figure out what to do here, and we will get guidance on that. But I mean, we still have to take a careful approach to it, and so I just don't want to minimize. Oh, well, that's just those 12 counties. We, you know, however they do it, that's just fine. I don't want it to come across that way, because that's not how we're thinking about it here. And so I think we've kind of exhausted our efforts here on what to do for the
legacy counties, but I do want to move on to a couple of things, unless anyone else has additional comments on this that are on the
phone. Jerome, this is Mark. If I can just say one word, maybe two sentences. Neil said something earlier that I agree with. I personally would rather have the non-CVR counties do even a relatively small ballot polling audit or one with a maximum workload than simply redo the legacy audit. I think there would be more learning from that. And I want everyone to know that I hear Dwight and others loud and clear. And it's something I had already said. You know, no one wants this to blow up. So in that sense, we're all working together. We're all looking for something that is quality and that is doable. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. And so I'll just want to move on to a couple of things. So we are... we have drafted a documented quote for RLA software, and we're still that's still being revised internally, and so we'll have it published within a few weeks, and so just wanted to provide everybody an update on that, a question I had as an assignment for next week, if you all can just provide the emails and things that you've been doing for the past while, if we audit a statewide contest, if we have one, and a county and this is just for the statewide contest. Kind of similar to my scenario from a couple weeks ago, but if the results come back from a county and there's a discrepancy, do we then do a resample for the whole state, or is it just for that county? And that this is just for a statewide contest. So say for this year we had all 64 counties participating. And we had kind of similar to the last time where 24 counties didn't get selected for a statewide contest and 40 did. And then one of the 40 came back with discrepancies and we put it in the software and it says, okay, now we need to look at this many more ballots and say that from that pool it selected one of the 24. And so I just want to know and get feedback from people on what do we do in that scenario? Do we basically so say the first time it goes around and say these 40 counties were selected, and the other 24 kind of like just wiping the sweat off their brow and say, oh wow, we didn't get selected, that's awesome, and then a day later they're like, oh hey, now you have to look at two ballots. Is that how it will work, or does anyone else have additional feedback on that? But I'd like you to submit that in writing, and I don't want to open it up for discussion right now because I know that it kind of sense people are chomping at the bit. But I'd like to submit it in writing to discuss for next time, Just kind of wrapping up here for some reminders to remind everybody to submit all of their RLA related information directly to me. The communication just works easier if it comes directly to me. So if you have any requests or any information or data or anything like that, please just submit the requests to me. You can either call me or email me. Our last meeting for this participation group will be April 14th. That will be our last participation group meeting. Kind of hard to believe that we're already here. And you can continue to send me information or ask questions up until the time we begin the rulemaking. And so that's a segue to Dwight. I asked him to kind of provide some guidance on how the rulemaking works as we're really not that far away from this starting. So I'm just going to turn it over to Dwight right now.
Thanks, Jerome. So as I think we indicated in all of the notices for this meeting, the risk limiting audit statute requires the secretary to adopt rules for statewide implementation of risk limiting audits. In order not to bombard our county colleagues with multiple iterations of multiple rules, we decided very early this year that we would include the risk limiting audit rule in our kind of ordinary post-legislative rulemaking. There are a number of matters, election-related but non-risk-limiting audit-related matters in this legislative session that likely will require some either new rules or revisions to existing rules. So we'd like to include all of this in the same rulemaking. The legislative session adjourns on May 10th. And so in that, we need to wait for the adjournment of the legislative session because that really kind of closes the universe of stuff that we need to be concerned with as far as rulemaking. So we anticipate issuing a formal notice of rulemaking by the end of May. And we would then have a public comment period. Ordinarily, the public comment period begins when we issue the formal notice of rulemaking, and it typically concludes 1 week after we conduct a public hearing. So that's roughly a 30 to 40 day comment period. We anticipate having the public rulemaking hearing in June, formal adoption of the rules by before the end of July, and just because of a lot of other administrative stuff we have to go through, that means the effective date for the new rules would be approximately mid-September. But counties and stakeholders and those interested would know what are in the formal rules by certainly the end of the July, and it may be closer to mid-July. So that is the standard rulemaking process. And because we formed this informal participation group, the Administrative Procedures Act requires us, and we are happy to do it, to send notice of the formal rulemaking to every member of the participation group. The members of the participation group are listed again in the notices of public hearings, so that is who we will also send the formal notice of rulemaking to. If you are not listed as a member of the RLA group, but you have been participating, an example would be Ron Rivest here in this case, there is a place where you can sign up for all of our notices on the homepage of our website, which is sos.state.co.us. And if you just opt into our automatic distribution list, you will be automatically included in that notice of rulemaking, and anybody in the world is invited to submit written comments and then also to appear at the hearing and submit additional comments in person if that's your desire.
Thank you, Dwight. I couldn't have said all that, so that's why we asked him to. Last thing I want to mention is we started the regional RLA trainings last week, and we received a lot of positive feedback. So for the counties that are here present and listening, or will listen to this. I think it went pretty well. We went from the counties being very fearful of doing a risk limit audit to them really starting to think about how they will improve or change processes that they have. And so we're glad to hear about that by the end of the training, that a lot of the fears had gone away. And so we'll continue to do that throughout this spring. That's all I have for today.
Hey, Jerome?
Yes?
This is Chris Ford from Boulder County. Can you give a 2-second overview of what you've done in that training? Are you just giving an overview of what it's going to be, or is it any kind of real training yet? What is that?
What do you mean by real training?
What is it you're presenting at the regional training for the RLAs?
Well, you have to wait to see it. Just kidding.
We're not going through any kind of algorithms or anything like that with the training, are we?
We're basically going through the steps that we have listed on the website. I have a presentation, and then we also are doing a hands-on demonstration for the participants to be able to conduct an RLA. So that's essentially what it is basically the step-by-step that we have posted on the website, and then me talking for 4 hours.
Excellent. Thanks.
Sure. I don't remember.
It was like the southern region.
About 12 counties or so.
So, actually, the training is really good, and the training has to, I should just say, Jerome and Danny and Jesse, but particularly Jerome, really spent a lot of time on the training, and I think it's quite good. But basically, it's an explanation of the concepts, and then we actually bring our Dominion system on site. We scan ballots, we generate the CVR export, we randomly select the ballots in this little kind of mini universe that we've created, and then ask the participants in the room to go through and confirm that the ballot corresponds to the CVR. We can't say absolutely everything that'll happen in the risk limiting audit because we haven't adopted the rule yet. But the point of this was to get out to the counties. We know what a lot of it is going to look like, and at least share that so they can start thinking about their processes. And from everything I heard, it was very successful. And we do have, actually, Chris and Boulder, keep a watch out for today's week in brief, because the dates and locations of the remaining RLA trainings are listed there.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks a lot, Dwight.
You bet.
Yeah, so Chris, we do have a metro, a central region training scheduled that you'll see in the week in brief. And so with all of that, thank you all for your input. Thank you for educating me when I needed to be educated. This has been very helpful. Like I mentioned earlier, we do have one more meeting left. And so we'll see you all in a couple of weeks. Hope you have a good weekend.
You too, Jerome.